on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, December 18th, 2025 edition. And yes, that means we're 1 week away from Christmas. So the final countdown for 2025. Hopefully everyone has their holiday plans lined up. It's going to be one of those holidays. I think we're a lot of things shut down right now. People are working the day after Christmas, the day after New Year's. You know, it's not a lot. A lot of people are going to be able to be contacted, I think. So it'll be an interesting one. But nonetheless, we will still be here. So on your downtime, don't hesitate. We'll do a couple of replay shows. So we'll do those. But if the market's open, we're probably doing a show. So just a heads up there. And, today, market was open. And new moves in the market, which we'll unpack here in a little bit. But I'm Justin Klein, and my objective for this hour is to help move you towards your own path of financial freedom by making you a better investor, an investor that doesn't make decisions based on fear, greed, or a headline or hype, but focusing on the facts on the ground, the reality of what moves markets and sectors and assets, et cetera. So that's what this show is about, and we do that mainly by answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you data so that you can take that back to your own particular situation and make smart decisions. Now, this year, we're doing something new. We produced the first ever Invest Talk holiday special. It drops today exclusively on our YouTube channel. It's fun. End of year episode. Luke and I are wearing holiday sweaters. And we look back at the year that was and highlight a few lessons, which we will carry forward into 2026. We also select the caller question of the year and explain why. And once again, it's called the Invest Talk Holiday Special. It's free to watch, but you do have to head over to YouTube, search Invest Talk. And while you're over there, I recommend you subscribe to that channel and hit the notification bell. In just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hey guys, just wanted to get your thoughts on the Magnum Ice Cream Company, MICC. I listen for it on the show. Thanks and Merry Christmas.
All right. This is MICC, Magnum Ice Cream Company, and this is a recent spinoff from Unilever. And they have, if I remember correctly, they have both the Magnum brands of ice cream, as well as, I believe, Ben and Jerry's, if I'm remembering correctly. Obviously, this is a new name. So, yeah, I believe that's what it is. And so it's a brand that's been doing very, very well, good profitability, etc. However, the biggest issue here is that it's a spinoff. And this is one of those lessons you learn over the years. These little idiosyncrasies is what us professionals, you know, we learn throughout the years, little things that most people don't really pay attention to or know about. And that's the fact that spinoffs typically don't do very well in the first 6 to 12 months of existence. And you might ask, why is that? And the simple answer is, it's not why somebody bought it, right? The spinoff is owned by the shareholders of the previous company. And the previous company, for this example, how many people bought Unilever because of Magnum ice cream? Maybe a little bit, maybe part of why they owned it. But remember, Unilever has a lot of different brands. And so typically when you get the spinoff, you say, I don't really want this anymore. They treat it kind of like a dividend and they just want cash. And maybe they'll reinvest it in the parent company like Unilever or in a new name. And so there's kind of consistent selling pressure from those shareholders that didn't want the name, wasn't there to own the name for any particular reason. And so I don't mind owning it. It's still a solid name with what seems to be a good business. But it's just going to have that pressure. So I would keep it on my watch list, see how the trends evolve in the name as well. I think that's going to be important. It's right now, it's kind of in the $15 range. We'll see if that holds and start to trend higher or you get a downtrend. We'll wait to see. So it's still a wait and see. Keep it on your watch list, but I would not buy it yet because of that likely headwind from the sellers of Unilever stock. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And time permitting, we'll focus on water scarcity and the $3.4 trillion infrastructure gap. We'll reveal how to profit from the necessary modernization of America's aging water systems and fight the infrastructure problem of scarcity. So we'll dig into that story. Also, we head into 2026 with a lot of positive momentum, as well as many banks having a bullish forecast. But what are the risks involved that could rear their ugly head next year? There's obviously the AI trade. There's valuation, concentration, inflation, and rates. You have geopolitical concerns, macroeconomic slowdowns. And then there's other ones as well. Liquidity deterioration, which I think is underappreciated. So we'll look into all of those factors. Which ones have the most, hold the most water when it comes to the risks for next year's markets? And then in conjunction with that, is JP Morgan Quants. They're saying extreme crowding in speculative stocks, meaning there's a ton of investors in very speculative stocks right now. And they list six stocks that are most vulnerable. And we'll dig into what those stocks are. We also have questions and voice bank calls on the stock market and 401ks, as well as Bloom Energy. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. So we have a full show for you as we count down towards the new year. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions live, but we're heading into a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime. Leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because I'm going to talk about today's market activity in the next segment.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce a high-value, limited-time offer, the Holiday Estate Bundle. It's specifically designed to help new households quickly establish a solid foundation for their financial and personal legacies before the year ends. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com. And while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART. "2025 is almost out the door, but you've still got finance and investment questions. And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are on the job. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market movements for today, December 18th, 2025. And it was a nice little bounce back day overall on the back of CPI numbers that on the surface looked pretty good. But if you look under the hood, there's not a lot of data. There's a lot of missing data. So it's kind of a number you can't really trust because of the government shutdown. And so, I think the market reacting to this doesn't really make sense because you're not really getting a full picture of what CPI will look like. But we'll see kind of next month what December has in store. So, but the market definitely bounced back from that pretty large sell-off in tech last night. And you had a pretty decent move in the NASDAQ, up 1.38% on the day after being down over 2% yesterday. So yes, it was a nice bounce, but if you go look at the charts, the S&P, after a big wide-ranging sell-off bar like you had yesterday in markets, you have to recapture the high of that bar for that negative kind of move to be negated. And we didn't do that. We kind of closed both on the NASDAQ and the S&P in the middle of yesterday's range. So we'll see if we can follow through from today's little bounce back. But overall, it was a pretty meager bounce and still tells me that the path of least resistance for the markets, at least in the short term, is a bit lower. And as I said on yesterday's show, it's not an indictment on the market. It's just the market needs a bit of, it means a bit of volatility to shake out the weak hands and shake out the investors that are on the wrong side, that have overexposed themselves either due to leverage or crowding into one sector or particular companies, etc. So that was the markets today. And what else did you have? You had the Bitcoin futures. They were down 1.1%. That's another aspect here. I always forget to kind of highlight that, but an important factor and something I just continue to watch each and every day is what's going on with Bitcoin. It's hanging around 85,000. It's trying to rally, recently tried to rally over the past week or so to around 90,000. As soon as it got even close to that, it just fell. So big resistance now at 90,000. And so once again, it's in a downtrend, which tells you a lot about the liquidity dynamics in the markets. And that means that it's headed lower, and that is going to weigh on asset prices as we close the year. Gold finished down 0.2%, kind of choppy trading, just kind of hung in there after yesterday's good day. Dollar index was up 0.1% on the day. Treasuries were a bit stronger. Yields were down about 2 to 4 basis points across the curve. So you had a little bit of strength on that front. But once again, nice little bounce back in markets, but not negating yesterday's move. So that was the market for December 18th. Now, let's answer a YouTube comment question. Kevin Siegert says, "Hey, Justin, always appreciate your market breakdown and really like what you've been doing, that you've been doing them live now. I've heard you mention your concerns with thematic ETFs, and I'm wondering if you could talk about the issues of these type of funds, and more importantly, could you talk about what type and style of ETFs you prefer and why?" So I don't have a problem with thematic ETFs themselves in a vacuum. The problem is what the context of them coming into existence is. And the fact is that I don't like newer thematic ETFs. Okay? That's probably the better way to put it. Why? Because usually when fund families come out with thematic ETFs, it's to capture the hearts and minds and wallets of those that are excited about the theme of the day. It's thematic ETF, right? And so right now it's AI and robotics, and there's ones that are out there like that. And so what happens is that it's buying into names that already have a lot of hype built in. They have a lot of expectations built into markets, and a lot of money is already put into that theme. And so you're chasing that theme usually near the end of that cycle, of that theme. And so from a valuation standpoint, as well as the risks of fund flows reversing, I don't like those thematic ETFs. Especially, like I said, the ones that have only been out for a year or two. Then on top of that are the fees. Fees on these are typically very high, especially when you can go and just buy the individual names. And a lot of times, they're big, popular companies. They're very liquid. They're very easy to understand how to gain exposure. For example, Robo, the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF, has a 95 basis point expense ratio. That's nearly 1%. That's nearly what our average client pays for us being a full service advisor, running financial plans, running full strategies, custom strategies, etc. But you're paying them pretty much just to create an ETF where their largest holding is Teradyne. It's a name that we hold for clients. We like Teradyne, but we'd rather just buy Teradyne. For example, Rockwell's in here, another one in the top 10, a name that we own for clients. rather just buy Rockwell. I'd rather find the best of breed within this space. So that's the way to think about thematic ETFs. You don't dismiss them out of hand, but understand when they're in existence because of some recent hype around that particular industry, you're probably late to the game, and it's a signal that that's a pretty crowded trade that is at a high risk at some point in the next year, 2-3 years to get unwound in a significant way. Now we're going to a break. My focus point is coming up next about water scarcity. And then, of course, more answers to your finance and investment questions.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
The new year is almost here, and it's a safe bet to assume you might have finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero, especially if you are wondering about potential tax implications. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The U.S. water system needs $3.4 trillion in investment. We break down the crisis in our pipes and how you can profit from the next massive infrastructure boom. So let's dig into this topic. And, you know, the crux of it is that much of the country's water infrastructure was built many decades ago, talking 70s and 80s. And there's been a lot of deferred maintenance that's created big, big problems. In fact, the Civil Society of Engineers this year gave the country's water infrastructure grades ranging from C minus to D. Okay. Now, and the reason for this is because in 1981, the federal government provided more than $25 billion in capital investments for water infrastructure. That was about half the total invested for the year. By 2021, that was only $4 billion, only 7% of total funding. So once again, a lot of deferred maintenance, and that has accounted, that's how you get to a $3.4 trillion in what's needed to be invested in drinking water, stormwater, wastewater infrastructure over the next couple of decades. Then you add on top of that the needs for data centers. Data centers need water to cool the chips. And there's a lot of, obviously, growth on that end. And most of this is coming from potable water from water utilities. So it's coming from the sources that you and I get water from into our homes. And it's not just about physical infrastructure, too. It's also about water systems and operations and management. And this is all usually because most utilities are regulated. They're borne by the customer, the individual. And the about $1 trillion in funding gap between what the federal government's going to give and what utility companies are going to have to pony up means that it can mean an extra $1,000 per year on the average household water and sewer bill. For poor people, that could be up to 200% increase from what they're paying now. So the question is, how do you invest in it? We know this is an issue, but how to gain exposure? Number one is obviously the safest way is going to be those regulated water utilities. The issue with that is that there's not a lot of upside, but there's also not a lot of downside either, because there'll be a funding gap and they're going to pass that on to consumers. They're going to still earn their return that is allowed by regulators, but it's going to be on a higher dollar amount. So they'll make more money in aggregate, which is good for you, the shareholder. So that's the conservative way. Then there's the more aggressive ways, which is water equipment treatments. Think pumps and valves, meters, leak detection, filtration, disinfectants, etc. And then there's the big projects, engineering and construction companies, specialty contractors, etc. So those are the different type of companies that can help you gain exposure to this type of new demand or obviously needed demand in the marketplace. But then which one is going to have the, will get going to gain the most, which kind of subsector here? And frankly, it's probably the piping companies, because those pipes are really old, because there's increasing urban sprawl, means more pipes that need, that water needs to go farther, etc. And then obviously the contractors to lay those pipes. So those are going to be the big winners. Once again, regular utilities also, but not as much as those pipes and contractors. And then you also see treatments and compliance, you know, getting rid of PFASs and things like that. That'll be important. That's more for environmental safety. And obviously we have more pollutants and things like that. I think there still will be a benefit there, but not as much as the others, because that's not really changing end demand, right? Not capitalizing too much on end demand. It's just the complexities of the regulatory system. And then lastly, smart meters, sensors, analytics, leakage. I think that'll be important on the margin, but not quite as much as the other ones. Okay. So this is a strategy that is Buffett-like in the fact that consistent business and easy to understand. Inflation-linked cost recovery is certainly good. Like I said, that's most utilities, where if the costs of running the business and building the infrastructure go up, well, that is passed on to the customer. And so that gives a downside protection, but also, limits, as I said before, limits the upside. So that's an overview of kind of the water industry, and hopefully that gave you a good sense of where we're at, where the opportunities lie, and why it's certainly a sector or a theme, as that previous caller had it, that you have to pay attention to and certainly could make a lot of money. That's a lot of opportunity, but understand where the best bang for the buck is, shall we say. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into this topic. De-dollarization, risks of the weaponized dollar. Is a dollar's global dominance ending? We'll break down the real risks of de-dollarization and how geopolitical sanctions could punish your U.S. heavy portfolio. That story is for tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and we're ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART.
The number of data breaches worldwide rises every year, going up by 211% from 2023 to 2024, due mainly to 5 mega breaches. Scams, identity theft, they all start with your personal data being exposed across various websites. It's on people search sites, in data broker databases, shady directories, AI answers, and even search results. That's the part most people don't see. Their home address, phone number, email accounts, and social security number aren't just leaked. They're being actively bought and sold by bad actors. But you can protect yourself now with Incogni. Incogni tracks down and removes your personal data from multiple sites, including online directories, people search sites, and even commercial databases. The Incogni process is fully automated for hundreds of known data brokers, companies that collect and sell your data without your consent. The categories of data brokers Incogni covers include marketing, recruitment, health information, risk mitigation, financial information, and people search sites. With Incogni, you can protect your privacy in 3 easy steps. Remember, they can't harm you if they can't find you. So, take back your personal data with Incogni. Use code INVESTTALK to get 60% off annual plans. Go to incogni.com/investtalk. You can also find the link in the episode description.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein, and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. My question is on Kupeng, ticker CPNG. I hold and have held for nearly 2 years, had planned to set it and forget it. And like the exposure, it gets internationally, but it's back to my original cost basis following a cyber attack recently. This spooked some to sell off. Is now an opportunity, or shall I look at this as dead money? How do you view the company, its outlook going forward? It currently sits at 2% of my overall with room to add. I should say I would like to add mid caps and blended mid caps. So look forward to hearing your answer. Thank you.
All right, looking at Kupeng, this is CPNG is the symbol, and it's out of South Korea. And it provides retail, restaurant delivery, video streaming, fintech services. So think of kind of all the big apps that we use, from Amazon to DoorDash to Netflix, et cetera, kind of all rolled into one here. It's an e-commerce platform, et cetera. And their business was growing considerably, but that growth has slowed. And this is a good example of anything in fintech is not a set it and forget it type of company. Bottom line, tech just moves too fast. Any company at any moment can be disrupted by another. History says that. And if you ignore that, well, you're going to get burned. And so you have to keep an eye on these things. Now, I'm not sure exactly what happened with the cybersecurity breach and et cetera, but I don't know if that's really the true catalyst here. I think that's an excuse, because if you look at the numbers, a year ago, revenues were growing in the mid 20% range. Last quarter and it was 18%. Quarter before that was 16%. Quarter before that was 11%. So growth has slowed to kind of mid-teens growth over the past three quarters. And then the last two quarters, earnings have fallen considerably. In fact, this year, full year 2025, earnings are expected to be down 23% to 17 cents from 22 cents last year. And the expectations are earnings to be up to 51 cents next year, but that estimate is coming down as well. So if you're looking based on current earnings, this is about 100 times current earnings. Forward-look earnings, it's still pretty expensive, more like 50 times. But I think it's just re-rating lower. And if I look at some of the other metrics, the good news is they have a good balance sheet. That's a positive. But free cash flow is $1.25 billion, which is good. But compared to the size of its enterprise value at around $40 billion, it's not great. It's not. It's only about a 3% free cash flow yield. So it's not cheap on that. In that sense, enterprise value EBIT is around 32. Not cheap there either. So I wouldn't own this name, to be honest with you. I don't like the trends in the stock. I don't like the trends in earnings. And it's just far too expensive. And if you look at the profitability metrics, return on equity is only 8%. That's not great. That's not great. And pre-IPO, this is a name that lost money consistently. So until it gets to more reasonable valuations, honestly, I probably wouldn't own this till the mid-teens. And now it's at 22. That's where I'd even consider it in the mid-teens. So I wouldn't own Kupeng. Let's play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
I have a general question. It's regarding the market and 401ks. I was wondering, do you find that the market tends to bump up the day after paydays, which is every 2 weeks, people's contributions into their 401ks, and suddenly the market goes up because there's this influx into all these different mutual funds? And as a second part of that, would that be a good time to sell if the market's going to have this minor blip up in those fees, or in those stock prices? Just curious how that works, or if that even is a possibility. Thanks.
I love this call because it gets partially there to the real crux of the question, but not all the way. And the crux is really about flows and how important flows are to the market. And yes, 401k flows are a big part of why markets tend to rise is because there tends to be more money injected into the markets on a consistent basis. And it's not just 401ks, but you're talking about pension funds, you're talking about robo-advisors. There's a lot of ways that money just consistently flows into markets, and especially these index funds. And that's why you have these giant companies, because it's how market cap weighted indices work, is that when a dollar goes in, if 7% of that index is in NVIDIA, for example, that means 7 cents for every dollar will go into NVIDIA. And so what you see here is it cuts both ways. And that's why I think there's a much bigger risk in the markets if there is a broader layoff momentum that's being built. You know, we've seen unemployment rate rise, but as less and less people are putting money into their 401k because of layoffs, that is going to weigh on markets. Those people start to use that capital, et cetera. Now, when you say, okay, is the market getting a little bump because of that money going into a 401k? You know, the timing of that does differ a little bit. For example, in our company, if on payday, we do pay every 2 weeks. The money doesn't actually come available until the Thursday after, just kind of how money moves from our payroll, et cetera. So every company's a little bit different. Once again, doesn't just hit on that Friday because you got paid. Okay. Can move, it takes a little time. And so it's not just one day that it happens, but it's a general move into markets. So what you have to do is you don't get cute and try to play the little bumps that maybe additional 401k assets are going to give the markets, but understand that big picture, this is an important factor. It's an important factor when it comes to flows. However, you want to look at it as a cycle, right? That if we do go into a higher layoff environment, then right now we're just in a low hiring environment. So if we're going to a layoff environment, then that is going to weigh on equity prices because less money will be heading into the indexes. Now, speaking of indexes, let's talk a little bit about 2026. As I've said, yeah, 2025 isn't over, but for all intensive purposes, markets don't move typically a whole lot in the month of December. If they do, it tends to be up a little bit, although this year easily could be down a little bit. But that's not going to make or break you. Whatever happens between now and year end, it's going to be more important what happens in the full year of 2026. So what are the risks for 2026 as we head into it, even with positive momentum generally for markets? And overall, the big banks are giving bullish forecasts. Understand, though, they almost always give bullish forecasts for the following year. So I would always take that with a grain of salt, no matter what. But to get another fourth straight year of gains, remember, 2022 was pretty poor, decent 2023 and 24, now 25. And to get a fourth year, there are risks that are involved that the market will need to dodge. And obviously, the number one is AI expectations. We talked about this kind of ad nauseum, but it still dominates the narrative. And the risks really are around timing of investments into AI, and most importantly, the return on investments of AI. And that still is a big question mark for many companies within the space. And, you know, will the adoption rate slow in any way? Will pricing power amongst the leaders in AI, will that weaken or strengthen? For example, I think Google right now is the leader with Gemini 3. I think it's so far the best. But maybe ChatGPT comes back and OpenAI comes back and really crushes it and outshines them. Or maybe it's Anthropic, or maybe it's Amazon. Who knows? But most importantly, competition will likely intensify. So can they raise prices to pay for the infrastructure that is needed to run these AI models? That is a huge question. And how will that impact earnings forecasts? Because one thing that's happened recently is that typically, there's a correlation between free cash flow in the tech space and earnings. And over the past couple of years, it started to diverge, whereas free cash flow has flattened out and earnings expectations, earnings reports have gone up. So how can that be true? So that's something we'll see if that comes back together. And then, as I've said, is the AI CapEx spending creating real economic value? And even a minor setback here could have really broad consequences because of the weighting in the indexes. So we're going to learn a lot more about things like TPUs versus GPUs throughout the year, which one's better, which one's more cost efficient, which one's more energy efficient, et cetera. Its impact on the jobs market, is that something that's really having impact over the past few months, or is that more tariff related, or just the slowdown in the economy, or is it AI driven? Okay, so that's probably the biggest risk in markets. For most people, this next one would be second, but I actually put this pretty low on the list, and that's valuation. Yeah, valuations are high right now, especially those mega cap names. But if you look elsewhere, you know, the market is maybe slightly expensive. If you take out kind of the Mag 7 or the top 10 names in markets, and you look at the other 490 in the S&P, you could say, you know, there's actually a lot of opportunity there. And so could it just be a market rotation that has already started? And I think that's probably most likely. And you could see, once again, that compression in earnings multiples becoming swift, especially for those big names. Now, the next one is probably my most flagged, in my mind, risk, which is, besides, yeah, sorry, not most flagged, second most, would be inflation in rates. Right now, the market is expecting inflation to continue to come down, for the Fed to continue to ease, and all that is generally positive for liquidity. However, what happens if the lingering effects of tariffs really push rates higher and force the Fed to actually tighten financial conditions as opposed to continue to loosen them? We saw recently when the Fed was talking a bit more hawkish around the December Fed cut, and they ended up obviously cutting, but they sparked a little worry in markets that they might not. And that created a bit of volatility. So that shows you something there. Now, next is geopolitical and trade. I find this somewhat high up on my list, but kind of in the middle of my list of risks. There's obviously still geopolitical tensions going on with Venezuela, China and the US, Russia and Ukraine, obviously what's happening in the Middle East, et cetera. But all of this kind of pales in comparison in the business community to what happens with tariffs and what happens with supply chains. That's when you could see a geopolitical event spiking volatility in some way. So I think it's on the radar, but not high up on my list. Then there's macroeconomic slowdown. We've already started to see that a little bit. Cost pressures, bank balance sheets, handling credit risk. To me, this all banks on how much does private credit and private equity feel the slowdown in the broader economy, because that's where the credit problems and credit risks lie. Simple as that. And so if this is a problem that rears its ugly head and starts to spread in that space, like the Tricolor and the First Brand issues that we saw back in September, if that becomes more of a problem, well, then that could spread to more widespread layoffs and defaults and bankruptcies within the private equity and private debt space. So I put that a little bit higher, frankly, than geopolitical concerns, because there's a lot of bad lending. I talked to a client recently about this and how the CLO market is very similar to the CDO market back in the financial crisis, where CDOs, they were chopping up mortgages. Now the CLO market is chopping up private credit and private debt and private equity type of investments. And you certainly don't want exposure there. And then there's a lot of kind of little things. Obviously, broad liquidity conditions are getting a bit worse. And we always said, crypto is kind of the canary in the coal mine here, and that continues to be weak. So you're definitely seeing deteriorating liquidity, which makes potential news events create a more of a volatile environment out there. And you also have crowded trades, especially in leverage ETFs. You've seen that recently. Systematic investors, passive investor strategies also create risks where you start to see disruptions. And then, as that caller said earlier around 401k flows, if those automatic flows from these systematic trading vehicles, as well as robo-advisors, et cetera, if that starts to reverse in a material way, I think that could put the market under a bit more stress. So hopefully that gave you a rundown of what risks are involved and are out there in 2026. And as I said recently, I do think we're going to have a very different 2026. And I think it's going to look probably more like 2022 than it did this year of 2025. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
KPP Financial is excited to introduce the Holiday Estate Bundle. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com. And while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started.
Let's go talk to our friend Bill in Northern California looking at BHP Group. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
No, I own it. Actually, it's more concerned with, I have it as a dividend plus playing the price game, like swing trade. But I like to buy it and things are coming down. I do this with quite a few stocks that tend to be cyclical in their pricing and accumulate shares on the way down. And then when it gets above my original highest price, I'll sell some off. And I'm just wondering how you see the sector and what you think might happen to this in the next year or two.
Well, BHP is a large diversified miner, $150 billion market cap. And it mainly makes money off of mining for iron ore, copper, and coal. And iron ore and copper are both about 45% of total revenues. And coal is about 10% of total revenues. And I think that's my main issue here is that iron ore is tied for the top spot. And iron ore demand is relatively weak, especially if you look at, I believe it was Nucor came out, or maybe it was Steel Dynamics, and saying there was relatively weak demand after hours. And so that's going to hurt a lot of the steel names and steel business as a whole. And so if I'm going to bet on a material in this space, it would be copper, which once again, 45% of revenue, that's great, but I'd rather own more of a pure play copper producer. So, yeah, I think this is okay, but there are much better opportunities out there in this sector.
So it would be a good time to lighten up if I have profit on all my shares. Just
I agree. This has rallied, and mainly because of the copper, but overall, iron ore is going to be a drag on overall performance. And you even see after hours, this is down not a whole lot, but 0.5% or so because of that news of the Nucor earnings. So I would certainly pass. I would be looking for better opportunities with this capital.
Very good. Thanks again.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now let's pivot lastly to one last voicemail question.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Ben from Virginia. Just calling with a quick question about Bloom Energy, BE, ticker symbol. Just curious what your thoughts are on this. I was in and out of it. I don't remember where I got the idea for it, but I took a little bit of a ride up, which was nice. Didn't take it as long as I could have at one point. But anyway, the point being, I see now that it's got a little bit of a spike, especially in the past few days or recently anyway. And was curious what you thought of this space, of this stock, of its recent ascent and sudden recent descent, the whole thing. Thanks so much for all you do. Really love it. I'll listen to the podcast.
Looking at Bloom Energy, and to be frank, this is a name that I wrote up as well for a little bit. I think I bought it in the mid-20s, wrote it to the mid-80s, sold it there, It went higher all the way to 140, so I sold a little bit too early. But now I'm feeling good because now it's at 80, so below where I sold it. This is just for a personal kind of high risk trade because I do like the idea of what Bloom Energy can provide for these data centers. And that is quick, clean power. And for years, Bloom Energy had been losing money. But if the cost and the demand for quick power infrastructure is high, they're going to do very well. And earnings are expected to be up to $1.05 next year from 54 cents this year, 28 cents last year. But it's an $80 stock. So you're taking 80 times forward-looking earnings. And frankly, that's where I sold it. You know, started to get a little bit of volatility, very high valuations, and I got out of it. So I would not be owning it now. I would certainly keep it on your watch list. You're going to have a time in 2026 where everyone hates the AI trade. It's over. It's the end, right? The hype wasn't real. And that's actually even the time to be buying these type of names. So keep on the watch list, wait for that sentiment check to hit, and that's probably when you want to pick up Bloom Energy. But it'll probably be much lower than here. I'm Justin Klein, and if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirement, and really whether it's all working for you to your end goals, I encourage you to reach out to my company, KPP Financial, and schedule a free portfolio review. All you have to do is head over to our website and click on the portfolio review button, fill that out, and we can help you bring more confidence or create more confidence and clarity to your situation. Now, you can tell your friends and family about a free podcast download you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Remember that our first ever Invest Talk holiday special is available now only on our YouTube channel. So search Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.